You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back and FanRag Sports, and I write for the Miami Heat's Tip Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Ramil, a credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat for SB Nation and AllYouCanHeat.com. I cover the NBA at large for FanSided and FanRag Sports, and you can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRamil13. Today's show is sponsored by Draft. Use the promo code LOHEAT, LOHEAT, and get a free entry after you make your first deposit. And check out our Twitter account at LockedOnHeat for instructions on how to join our league and play against us during tonight's slate of games.
We're joined today by writer and host of the podcast, Talkers Talk, Ty Windisch. We're going to talk about tonight's games, tonight's game between the Heat and the Bucks, and about if any of these teams can challenge the top teams in the Eastern Conference. But I'd like to start with, Ty, your impressions of that first game this last Sunday when Miami beat the Bucks 97-79. I don't know how many Heat games you've been able to watch recently and catch up on, but this is a team that has obviously risen from out of the playoff picture to fourth in the Eastern Conference within just a little bit over a month. I just want to know what your takeaway from that game is and what overall maybe your impressions of the Heat have been so far, or at least recently.
Yeah, that was a tough game. I pretty much I basically was wishing I was watching it through like the bottom of a hard liquor bottle because it was so bad. And like I couldn't believe the first half, to be honest. The first half was a good game. I think the Bucks were up 2 at half, and then it was like 44-42, and then by the start of the fourth quarter, the Bucks had 59 points, and I was like, yeah, this is how I expected this to go. The South Beach afternoon thing doesn't help much, but I haven't watched a ton of Heat. I don't watch as many games as I'd like to make up for it. I read a lot. I try to read pretty much everything that comes across my timeline, at least briefly. So, the things I read about the Heat are the things that make sense to me about the Heat from when I do see them, which is like they don't have an all-star, right? They might, maybe they'll end up with an all-star. Who knows? But they don't have a superstar. Like there's no Giannis or anything like that here, clearly.
Right.
But they play hard as hell. I think they have maybe the third best coach in the league, at least easily top five in my opinion. In Spo, he always has the.
Okay, so who are the two that are ahead of him? Because this is a point of contention on this show. So who are the two that you have ahead of Spo?
Pop and Stevens, but I could see giving Spo two.
All right, fine, good enough.
I can't put him above Pop. Pop's my number one all time. So like as long as Pop's
totally
fine.
Like,
but I don't know. I'm a big Stevens guy. But I think Spo almost does more with less. I know this isn't what we're supposed to talk about, but I feel like...
Almost.
Not this year, easily almost. But I mean, like, the Stevens had the great year with IT and a bunch of random guys, like, 2 years ago. And the whole narrative was like, wow, they don't have that many good players, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, Spo does this every year since LeBron left. It's this every single year with even less. But we don't really talk about it that much. I think people are just tired of Spo. But anyway, way off track. Sorry. I'm never getting invited back.
No, that's perfect. That's exactly what we want to hear as far as this podcast is concerned. Yeah. As far off track as possible.
Okay, perfect. It's good to know I'm pretty much at home here. But the Bucks game, and talking about Spo is perfect because when these two teams played – it's like the Bucks. They always look like a pretty good team because, hey, there's this guy named Giannis Antetokounmpo who's one of the best three players in the league. And that's how you pronounce his last name, by the way. It's Antetokounmpo, which gets a lot of people, which is fair. But anyway.
No, he's a one-name guy. He's
that's fine. That's fine. You could just say Giannis. People get Giannis wrong. Like, you'll hear Giannis. It's like, come on. It's Giannis. Put some respect on it. But anyway. But they're at such a disadvantage when they play the Heat, the Celtics, and the Spurs, among other teams. Those are the three teams I named with the top three coaches in the league because the Bucks' coaching situation is less than ideal, which is a very generous way to put it. And it really is on display when they play teams like the Heat because you watch all the stuff Miami does on offense, like constantly driving and kicking, and guys are always in the right position. And then you watch Eric Bledsoe and Chris Middleton just drive, and a bunch of guys stand around, and there's like one pass per possession. And the Bucks' offense is basically like an on-ball screen, and then a lot of people stand and wait their turn to drive into two guys. And it's kind of infuriating to watch because the team's actually pretty talented, and they just choose not to run offense, and their defensive scheme is clearly not that good, and it's not a good idea to run with their personnel, but they do it anyway. So all this to say, a long way of getting across the street, I wasn't shocked that the Heat beat them by a lot. And an afternoon in Miami, the Heat are way better coached. They were surging, and the Bucks are just such an inconsistent team. Like the, I think the Heat were on a 7-game win streak until they lost against Chicago in Chicago. I don't know if Bucks. I could be wrong on this. I don't think they've had a 7-game win streak all year, and I don't think they will unless something changes because they're just such an up and down team.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think tonight's game is going to be vastly different just because, well, like you pointed out, that South Beach factor won't be there. The coaching thing, though, that is interesting because my own co-host was, might still be a big fan of Jason Kidd as a coach. As far as his overall approach, you know, he was a big fan of his use of lack of position basketball, I guess, you know, just using multiple players throughout the roster in different ways than are expected. And so that was something that was interesting at first about
There's a Mark Jackson vibe to him where it's like, you know, there's some good stuff that he can implement and he takes you about as far as he can. I think there's just not much more that he could give. But in Mark Jackson's case, it was like, okay, with him, you can get to maybe the first or second round of the playoffs if you have a transcendent player like Steph or even like, you know, like Giannis in Milwaukee's case, like he can get you that far. I think Jason Kidd's like, he could probably get you to 500. Yeah. And then that's probably about it. You know, it's just like a notch below. So anyway, just defending myself here, but go ahead, David.
No. I mean, it's just interesting because, you know, obviously we've had a lot of stability here with our coaching. You know, obviously Pat Riley was here for a long time, minus a short stint by Stan Van Gundy for a couple seasons. But, you know, Spoelstra's been there at the head position for, you know, almost, what is it? This is his 9th season now since 2007. So, I mean, he's been there for a while. But, you know, Jason Kidd, you know, he was a popular choice, I think, at first, you know, having come over from the Brooklyn Nets. But it seems like the bloom is off the rose, as they say. And I'm just curious, you know, obviously you have your issues with him, Ty, but how much of that is spread throughout the Bucks fan base? Are they kind of fed up with what Kidd brings to the table? Are they looking for a viable option? Who would you prefer coaching this roster of available or not available?
Can I ask a real quick question to you two? What would the Bucks record, just without thinking too hard, be if Spoelstra was the coach this whole year? Because I think they have 30 wins by now.
I don't know about 30 wins. I think they're really good.
Boston's got 34. Golden State's got 36. Houston's got 30. Yeah. And Houston's got 30 with all of their injuries. Like, if Houston was healthy, they'd have, like, 34, 35. So, I think, you know, maybe not. They don't have the personnel to run that defense, but I don't think that they would. And I also think that Spo would have made.
All you have to do is just switch everything. Like, right? Like, their roster is so perfect for switching. Their 1-5 is Bledsoe, Brogdon, Middleton.
The problem is that their centers can't switch. That's the problem. Is that everybody, like, you look at their centers and you think that they could switch, but they're not experienced or smart enough yet in a basketball IQ sense to do it on a consistent basis, and that's why they gave up so many. That's what they did last year, and they gave up too many open shots and stuff like that. Like, I think of, you know, I don't know, who knows how many wins that they have, but obviously they wouldn't be at 7th place in the Eastern Conference if Spo was their coach.
That's fair. Agree with that.
I think you could switch 1-4 if you have a traditional center, and that's pretty easily. Yeah, it's just obvious. And, you know, you can always run Giannis at 5 and throw Snell in there too, and then you can really switch. I think that lineup should kill teams. Like, that's a mini death line, in my opinion. Like, it doesn't shoot the same, but defensively, like, that lineup should just smother everyone, and they don't switch, so it doesn't work. But anyway, the Bucks fan base, there's a Fire Kid Twitter avi with, like, his face and like a circular logo someone made. And there's dozens of accounts that use this as their picture now. Like, it's hard to tell people apart. I think it died down a little bit. I could be wrong, but it's a movement. Like, people tweet at the Bucks, the Suns owner, Alex Lazary, who is like their, He's got a position with the team. I'm going to get it wrong. And he's a cool guy. He holds himself accountable. He communicates with the fans, but I almost feel bad because every game that no matter what happens, like 10 people are going to tweet at him, fire kid, every single time. Like it's a grassroots movement. It's like when freaking Bernie Sanders was running for president and like it just happened on social media. That's my analogy for the podcast. My tenuous analogy.
The hot seat, feel the burn.
The people are trying to make this happen, man.
So I want to talk more about the Bucks. We'll do that next. But first, hey, basketball fans, listen up. If you love fantasy basketball, then you need to try our new favorite fantasy app. It's called Draft. It's daily fantasy basketball, but it's not like the other guys. Draft was launched in 2014 with the idea that the draft is the best part of playing fantasy. The only problem is that you only get to draft once in your season-long leagues, and traditional daily fantasy can be intimidating by the pros, not with Draft. Yep. On Draft, you play. Why? You know about the pros? You've lost a lot of money on daily fantasy already, Ty?
Oh, man. Millions. I have to do these podcasts just to stay in my house.
On Draft, you play with a live snake draft, no salary cap with other people. Plus, there's no multi-entry or player overlap, so you don't have to worry about those fantasy sharks gaming the system and taking millions of your own dollars. Draft is designed to make fantasy sports simple, fair, and fun. Here's how it works. It's a draft that lasts for just one night. All you have to do is pick a draft and begin. Drafts start every couple of minutes, so you can join one right now or when you're done listening to this podcast. Here's my favorite part. After the draft, there's little to no lineup management. Just set it and forget it. No trades, no waiver wire. Draft even takes care of last-minute injuries for you. And, of course, you play for cash. Drafts start from just $1, so there's a draft for everyone. Again, no salary cap. Live snake drafts. No losses because you forgot to make a last-minute sub for an injured player. Draft leans into the best part of fantasy sports. That's the draft. And you could play whenever you want. Join Draft today. Download the app. Just search Draft in your app store and join a game in minutes. Or play right from your computer on draft.com. For a limited time, all new players get a free entry into a draft when you make your first deposit. All you have to do is use the promo code LOHEAT. Play a free game and win real money by using the promo code LOHEAT on your first deposit. Okay, so we're going to talk about whether or not any of these teams can even make any noise in the Eastern Conference in the first place. But Ty, you were talking about Jason Kidd, and obviously, you know, the ceiling that maybe a less than ideal coaching situation could put on a team. But this team, the Bucks started off really strong. Giannis is an MVP candidate if they can maybe improve that record. But they're kind of fallen off a bit. They're 5-5 in their last 10. They lost three of their last five. The schedule hasn't been easy. You know, one of those losses was against the Warriors. That happens. But this is a team that still has some clear holes to fill despite Giannis developing into one of the best all-around players in the NBA. What do you think it is that they have to do to be better than where they're at right now, which is just seventh place in the Eastern Conference? It feels like they should be better. They've already made that move to acquire Eric Bledsoe. What else? Do they need to make another move? What kind of changes do they have to make?
I mean, if you listen to like Bucks fans, they need to have five All-NBA players to be higher than the seventh seed in the Eastern Conference, which is ridiculous. I mean, obviously, the first thing that most people would probably say is a coaching change. I don't think it's actually going to happen, not during the season at least, which is a little sad because like Fizdale is there, and I think Fizdale is good.
That would be a good move, right?
That would be a great
move. I mean, you can't do it in the middle of the year, but...
I mean, why not? And listen, if the Warriors scoop him up and Luke Walton's available, I'll take Luke Walton too. I like Luke Walton. I think he's going to be a good coach.
You mean if the Lakers scoop him up?
Yeah, what did I say?
The Warriors.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if Steve Kerr's available, we'll take him too. But yeah, I meant to say Lakers.
Okay.
I was thinking Warriors.
You've already got one former NBA point guard as your head coach. Do you really want Kerr there too? I mean, come on.
I think Kerr was – we're gonna call him a shooting guard just for the sake of for that.
Oh, I see.
I think he was a point guard really, but no, I was thinking Warriors just because I'm thinking like coaching trees, and I'm a kind of big believer in those. Like the Pop coaching tree is crazy good. So like give me
– Until you get to Jacques Vaughn though.
Yeah, I guess. Listen, sure. Maybe –
The ones that aren't good get
let
fired.
Me let me get Jacques Vaughn for the rest of the season. You know, like let's try something.
Nope. So other than a coaching change, that's probably not gonna happen. Even if it should. What can the Bucks do here? Like, is there trade deadlines February 8th? What do they got to do there? I mean, I'm just gonna throw this out at you, and I know the listeners already know what's coming up here. Hassan Whiteside.
Oof.
What would it take? What would you trade for Hassan Whiteside at this point?
Man, I love David coming in with like the 80s comedian. Oh, He's been good lately, man. I think the price just went up on Hassan Whiteside. What would I give up for
him? Yes, it did. What do you have to trade now for?
I don't. I see you might have an agenda here. I don't know. Like, the thing is, like, it's so hard for this because, like, you never want to give up anything and you want the whole world in return.
Sure.
Would you do Middleton straight up?
I don't think I would. I think Chris Middleton is like, okay. I just feel like he's one of the keys to their death lineup. Like, I don't think they need to make a hasty move. Like, I feel like if they got a decent backup center to go with Henson, they'd be fine. Like, Thon cannot play anymore. He's just, I don't know what happened, but he's lost out there. To stick with the deer theme, he looks like Bambi running on ice 80% of his minutes. Like, he's just skirting around and, like, flailing wildly, and it's not good. And they get crushed in the majority of his minutes because he's not playing like an NBA caliber player. Like, they had Joel Bolenboy for a cup of coffee. I kind of wish they kept him because I feel like he would be an upgrade over Thon McCurr. This point.
The last time they had an average to above average defense is when they had Zaza Pachulia, yes. And that's not saying much. But they just, you're right. I think look, as much as I want to give you a Hassan Whiteside for something, but I think
would
you're
would
right.
Would you take is
just go find a decent?
Would you take Henson and DJ Wilson? Do you want a 2 years away from being 2 years away guy and John Henson?
I'm a big fan of DJ Wilson, so I'd probably just do Wilson for Whiteside.
No, that's not working with our budget.
I'd try to probably get a couple first rounds out of you too.
Could I quickly rank the Bucks trade assets for you? Would that be fun?
It'll be sad, I think, for you, but go ahead.
I would put Giannis obviously first. And then, like, the second place to me is fascinating because I think there's a real argument that it's Malcolm Brogdon, considering what he's shown in limited, like, role and his contract situation. And then it's, like,
that's fair.
Middleton, Jabari, I don't know, like, Bledsoe. Like, we're not that far from Sterling Brown at this point, which is a little – and there's, like, I'm not thinking about draft picks, but, like, I'm sure I'm forgetting someone, too. Like, Tony Snell, he's probably not worth anything because his contract. Dele's not worth anything. Mirza, sadly, is out with blood clots, which is actually really hurting them, and I think that's, like, not been talked about much. They don't have a real backup power forward at all. So Jabari coming back is going to be really, really big. And that's the other thing, too. Like, that's their midseason move is getting Jabari Parker back, which is going to be huge for this team.
Right. And when is that supposed to happen?
That's supposed to happen it's supposed to be within a week or two before the All-Star break. So pretty soon. Yeah, oh. Soon.
Yeah, very soon.
Yeah, it won't help the defense. I think Wes said that. I really think they should start him off the bench and have him. If it was me, I would run starters of Bledsoe, Snell, Middleton, Giannis, Henson, and then just run like a 9-man rotation or maybe 8, and like use a bench unit where you can sort of have Brogdon and Jabari play together a lot. They did that with Brogdon and Monroe last year, and it was really effective. And having like those two guys worked well together and they played together a lot and it made their rotations very solid. And they don't have that now. Like the bench is terrible. Now that Brogdon's starting, the best bench player is like Tony Snell, which is not ideal. Like Tony Snell's fine, but it's not like you can look to Tony Snell like, hey, Tony, can you score 3 buckets in a row for us? Like, no, he cannot do that.
So you mentioned Jabari Parker, and that's an interesting name, obviously. And I think it's one that a lot of Heat fans have brought up in the past. And, you know, you mentioned that as far as your rankings and trade asset, is Parker somebody that you think the Bucks would be willing to trade? I mean, they'd have to get something significant in return, right? Even despite the contract situation, even despite the injury history, he's still a prize prospect.
I mean,
right?
I think he should be. I don't know if he is. There was an unsubstantiated-ish report that the Bucks were interested in using him to basically dump three before he got hurt last year. And I didn't see it from any of like the reporters that I would stake stuff on, if you know what I mean. I saw it from like the grade below that where you're like, oh, maybe that could be a thing. And that would just be a disaster. Like if they do like Jabari and Mirza for salary relief, that's an unmitigated disaster. Like the guy coolly, easily scores 20 points per game. He can shoot from deep better than most people think. He can't really play defense, but like I'm not uber concerned about it. Like if they just switched everything, it wouldn't be that big of a deal anyway. They could just hide him. It's wild that could happen. Maybe. I don't know how real that is. I would hope that they would ask a ton for him. The problem is like they're not going to get it, right? Like the Heat aren't going to give up a ton for Jabari Parker.
Hassan Whiteside? Would you take a Whiteside?
There's a lot of people that would. The Bucks might. I don't know if they. I would not want to.
That's great. No, I can understand why you wouldn't. I mean, Jabari just seems like an attractive name for a lot of fans. They think that he's the kind of young, ideal player that you can kind of build a team around. He's obviously a great scorer. I don't know if he's necessarily going to be your team alpha at any point, but at the same time, he's a guy that you can mold, and I think they have enough faith in the Miami coaching staff and their development staff to kind of turn him into an elite-level player and improve him defensively, of course. So, I mean, that's why I think he's as attractive as he is to a lot of Heat fans.
Yeah, we could talk about we could talk about trade assets all day. I mean, we've done hours of material on that, but we got to talk about whether or not these teams are going to compete right now, which is really what's at hand here. But first, quick reminder that make sure you are subscribed to Locked On Heat on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. And to leave us a review on iTunes, it helps other Heat fans discover the show. Also, be sure to check out Talkers Talk, which is our own Ty Windisch's show.
Yeah, shout out to Talkers Talk. I heard I have between 3 seconds and 45 minutes to talk about the podcast right now. I'll do it quicker than that, quicker than 45 minutes. It's me and my guy, Ben Mahitch. And we did it in segments, so it wouldn't be complete chaos, but it's like barely regimented chaos. We talk about the NBA. We make sure to do at least some NBA stuff, but like we ask each other questions. We have this segment called Tinder where we both swipe left and swipe on anything that's happened over like the last week. It's a really fun show. Just check it out. It's kind of random. It just started. There's like 4 listeners. I think David's like a quarter of our listenership right now.
Hell yeah.
But check it out, please. I think it's fun. And sometimes we bring takes too. And there was fake trades in the last one. I had a Kemba trade. It was spicy.
Ooh, I like it. And that's on iTunes, guys. You could find it again.
Talkers Talk. I'm so bad at the plugs. It's everywhere we find podcasts and it's on Twitter. Thank you, Wes. I appreciate that.
No problem. So the Heat are now only a game behind the Cavaliers for third place in the East. The Bucks, they've got Giannis, who could be the best player on the floor at any given night. They are pretty, I think we're pretty confident they're going to make the playoffs despite any major injury or fatal collapse here. But it seems like still Boston, Toronto, and Cleveland, those are the clear cut top three in the East. Can the Heat or the Bucks? Now, I'm not going to say can either of those teams win the conference? I don't want to get into that argument because who knows, and probably not, but can they? In a playoff matchup, do we think that either the Heat or the Bucks? Now, again, the Heat, good ensemble cast there. The Bucks have Giannis and a lot of nice players there. Can either of these teams take out one of those top three teams? Again, Boston, Toronto, Cleveland. Ty, what do you think?
I would say absolutely. I almost want to – like, I'm tempted to say almost the Heat more. Do you remember the first round of last year's playoffs that the Heat should have been in if Brooklyn wasn't shady?
Yes.
The Bulls came very close to beating the Celtics, and a freak like injury to Rondo of all people kind of prevented that from happening. Like, were the Bulls not similar-ish to the Heat in the fact that they just grinded really, really hard? I mean, they had the star in Jimmy Butler, but I feel like they were one of those teams that just grinded, and doesn't let up, and they're really well coached. There's not a lot of teams like that in the East. Like, a lot of the playoff teams in the East are like fodder. Like, I feel like the Wizards don't have that discipline. Like, the Wizards kind of can like fall apart randomly. Like, the same with the Raptors, who are just notorious for randomly dropping the first two games of any given series. Like, if the Raptors are down 0-2 to the Heat, I would take the Heat in the rest of the series. Like, I think I don't think they would. I think they could win their home games. Like, it's that simple. Even if it was 1-1, if the first two games were in Toronto, like, the Miami's in that series. Cleveland is something, man. Like, I gotta see what they're gonna try to make a trade without trading the Nets pick, which is like, all right, cool. Who's giving you a real player for J.R. Smith or Shump or whatever? Like, they're hilariously a mess. Only the Kings are worse defensively. I mean, LeBron's LeBron, so they'll probably beat the Bucks or the Heat pretty easily, but they're shaky. They're legitimately shaky. For the first time in a while, I feel like LeBron's team could actually lose in the East, which is wild. And then the Celtics are really good, but they've been more human lately, and they have a lot of really young guys. And so far, those guys have not played like young guys, but the playoffs can be different. And, you know, Kyrie has proven. It wouldn't shock me if the Celtics made it out of the East. It wouldn't shock me that much if Toronto did. But I think the point generally is like there's a little bit of weakness at the very top, which is Cleveland. which kind of leaves it open to everybody. And like the Bucks have a chance just because Giannis might just like win them three games and then their team shows up for one game and they win the series. Like that's the Giannis effect. And they have other good players too, but obviously Giannis is Giannis. The Heat might just like run like Spo might coach circles around someone and they win the series even though their best player is Goran Dragic, who shout out to him, he's really good, but he's not LeBron or Giannis or these other guys. Like they might win anyway though. Like I'm not counting out the Heat this year.
I tend to kind of agree with you that I think Miami could knock off at least Toronto, to be honest with you. I feel like, and I know this seems kind of rote to keep going on about the same aspect, but Toronto's two best players tend to fade a little bit in the playoffs. There's always an injury issue with them as well. And, you know, so long as they have Jonas Valanciunas manning the center position, he limits what they can do offensively. I mean, even though he's expanded his range somewhat. So I think Miami would be able to control that matchup, unlike what happened a couple of seasons ago, strangely enough, when both him and Whiteside matched up and Valanciunas seemed to have Whiteside's number for some reason. Luckily, they both got hurt and it tilted the series in Toronto's favor. You know, Cleveland, I'm still convinced that they're going to be able to turn things around. I don't know. Maybe it's empty. I know a lot of people, you know, obviously the recent reports that they're not convinced.
They had an anonymous press conference. This was the weirdest thing ever.
It's not – It wasn't anonymous. I mean, it was LeBron talking to like three different media outlets saying the team can't win with IT playing defense the way he does. I mean, that's ridiculous for him to come out and say that.
Marquee players, sorry. David, could be anyone. It could have been Derrick Rose, marquee player Derrick Rose, who hasn't played in 2 months.
Former NBA MVP Derrick Rose.
Yeah, marquee.
You know, Boston. Boston, I think, is the most dangerous team, to be honest, because I think they're expecting to get Gordon Hayward back. Supposedly, he'll return to the team in April, come off the bench, maybe play 15 to 20 minutes a night, and just add even more depth to a team that seems to be able to beat you down with depth and have far better, you know, like Miami's best asset is their depth, but at the same time, they don't have a star player like Kyrie Irving. And they don't have a versatile center like Al Horford who can change things and add so much defensively. So to me, he is. He's underrated as hell. And I think Boston is the most dangerous of those. But, I mean, I like Miami's ability to match up with any of those teams and at least make it interesting. And I think Milwaukee can do the same thing. I mean, I struggle to see what happens there. I know they're not well coached, and I know that sometimes they can get very formulaic as far as how they run their offense, if they run an offense at all. And at the same time, I kind of feel like they still have the talent to trump any team there.
You know, I think when we talk about Boston, Toronto right now, those are the two clear-cut favorites in the Eastern Conference, just because what they could, both those teams obviously could get it done offensively, but defensively, they're both really good. And I think the issue with Cleveland, Milwaukee, and Miami right now is defense. And we don't talk about that enough with Miami, is that their defense has been average all season long. Boston has had consistently the best defense in the league, and it's not been close, you know, all season. I think the Warriors, at the end of the day, they could turn it up to a level where they can't, where they could play basically Durant or Draymond Green as their Draymond Green as their front court, and that just changes everything for them. But during the regular season, Boston is just so good defensively. And again, what you guys are saying, Al Horford, what he does there is just tremendous. But for Cleveland, Milwaukee, and Miami, you know, defense is going to be an issue for them. For Miami, Justice Winslow comes back. I really think that's going to help a lot. And as there are guys like Kelly Olynyk and Bam Adebayo, new additions in that front court, getting more comfortable playing in that system, the better they're going to be. And as they get healthier, the better they're going to be. From Milwaukee and Cleveland, I almost think that we were talking about trade ideas a little bit earlier. I think they're going after the same player. Whoever that player is, it's basically the same cheap big body center who can just kind of come in and plug things up in the middle a little bit just for 20 minutes a game.
My dream acquisition, Kylo Quinn, object of my desires, the best underrated center. Oh my goodness. I like to think I've had four dreams about the Bucks trading for Kylo Quinn. He's like perfect. He's exactly who they need. And he's just languishing in New York. The one thing I will say about the Boston thing, their defense is terrific. I would be very intrigued at them if they got a big guy at the deadline. Maybe object of my desires, Kylo Quinn, because I have seen Al Horford teams lose to teams that like have a guy who grabs rebounds over him and reloads shooters and just rains down threes on him. Like they've lost that way to LeBron teams, either on the Hawks or the Celtics. Like five playoffs in a row, it feels like. Like, that's the weakness. Like, he can do everything except body up your, like, if you guys keep Hassan Whiteside, like, Hassan would get, like, 20 boards a game in that series if he played big minutes. Yeah. And that's the thing, like, there's this whole idea that, like, you can't rely on centers in the playoffs. I don't know, like, how many teams can do what the Warriors do, like, the Rockets can now, and really run a center off the floor. Like, I feel like Hassan Whiteside could be a game changer in a series with the Celtics, because, like, they're, like, Aaron Baines is bigger, I guess. I don't think he's that skilled. Like, Hassan could be huge in that series in rebounding.
That's tough to say. I mean, the issue with Whiteside is that you don't know what version of him that you're going to get. He's capable of big games, but I think Wes and I both agree that his best role on this team is to be kind of like a lesser option, or have a reduced role, and to keep him as efficient as possible. Because if not, he starts to get a little greedy. He'll start putting up these 19, 20 footers. He'll take it in. Into the low post and try some whack ass, you know, hook shot with like three defenders draped all over him. I mean, he can get pretty bad. Our listeners have gone to the point where they understand that both Wes and I can be really critical of Whiteside, but lately he's been better because he hasn't been trying to do as much, and he's actually been setting really good screens. I wrote about it. He's led the team in screen assists over the last couple of games since he returned from injury. He's making passes. Like, that's another thing, too. He actually had four assists in one game. He had six assists in the first, like, 16 games of the season or something like that, and he's had, like, nine since then. Again, this isn't a huge amount of assists, but for him, he's averaging one assist per game since he returned from injury, which is very impressive considering what kind of numbers he put up beforehand.
Ty, any final thoughts on either of these teams, the Eastern Conference or whatever
you are thinking about? The Bucks, you know, listen, they have the talent. If Eric Bledsoe and Chris Middleton would just, like, reduce their tunnel vision a little bit on drives to the rim and think about passing to the one guy in the corner, which happens every time, the Bucks would be a lot better. Also, Giannis in that Heat game had 12 shots, and those two both had 16, and I think Brogdon also had 12.
We talked about that on our
Clearly a huge problem. Like, I don't need to go into it. Giannis should have, like, a lot of shots. He's kind of good. The Heat are interesting to me, and I know this is, like, it sucks to kind of bring it up now because it would be something that could be interesting to talk about in depth. We don't really have time to. But, like, I don't know if they are going to make any, like, big trades, because I feel like they're such a chemistry team. Like, I don't know, you know what I'm saying? Like, who could they move where you don't worry, like, oh, this might throw off the team. So they're almost locked in how they are. Oh, locked in Heat. Oh, look at that. But I don't think that's terrible. I don't think that's terrible. Yeah, I do my best. But I think that's good for them. Like, that's a classic Spo team. I think they're going to grind it out. And I'm glad that they proved that the last half of last year was not a one-off thing. They proved me wrong, to be honest. I was not a believer. But I am now. They're a really tough-to-beat team.
I will say that I think Miami's probably due for a loss, another one. I think that game against Chicago was an aberration, but I just get the feeling that they're going to go on the road. They're starting off a lengthy road trip, and I think they're going to go into Milwaukee and not necessarily regroup from what happened. I'm not sure. I mean, they're also going to be without Tyler Johnson. He wasn't a huge factor in the win against Milwaukee, but at the same time, he is an important one because he's a secondary ball handler. He brings aggressive behavior on defense, and opportunistic three-point shooting as well. So without him there, I'm curious to see who's going to step up. I mean, they might have to start Justice Winslow, and that lowers their ceiling offensively. At least we anticipate that it probably would. So it's going to be an interesting matchup, but I assume that actually Milwaukee pulls out.
Is Tyler Johnson busy helping his brother Dwight shoot on the farm? Because that guy is Moe's from The Office. Like, that's the same person. If you guys don't watch The Office, you got to Google Moe's from The Office. That's no, Tyler exactly Johnson. Sorry.
Yeah, he's just fewer teeth. thank you to Draft. Use the promo code LOHEAT. Get a free entry after you make your first deposit. Check out our Twitter account at Lockdown Heat for instructions on how to join our league and play against us during tonight's slate of games. The Heat play the Bucks tonight. We'll be back tomorrow with a recap of that game. But for now, that's all we have for today. Thank you for listening and for subscribing. Thank you, Ty, for joining us today. Tell people where they could find you.
Oh, man. Find me on Twitter, Ty Windisch, spelled T-I-W-I-N-D-I-S-C-H.
Also, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, Talkers Talk. You can send mailbag questions and ask about advertising by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions and comments for our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
Thanks for joining us, Ty.
Thank you guys for having me.